Good evening to all of you, and welcome to this forum. And I hope this is one that you find of interest and benefit to you. We will start our time in order to keep faith with our format and sort of the promise that we make to each other. One of the parameters of the forums at Holden is that we try to have an understanding when we start of some of the ground rules and then try to stick to those. One of those is that we will limit the forum time itself to 1 hour. And to do that, I have borrowed not only a watch, but this is the director's watch.
Official timepiece.
We are on official time tonight for our forum. Mainly that's because I don't have a watch that works. The topic before us tonight has to do with the area of homosexuality, the question of homosexuality. We are going to be inviting you to engage in conversation with others here in terms of your own feelings, where you're at in terms of coming to terms with the questions and the issues that arise out of homosexuality. We are structuring the forum around the basic idea of responding to gay and lesbian people. The reason that this forum was chosen for this week and this time, any of you who heard Tosh give matins the other morning, he mentioned that this week is National Gay and Lesbian Pride Week. So we thought it was appropriate to raise this question in the village at this time. The other is it's a very appropriate question for people in the church to be looking at and struggling with. I think you're all aware of the fact that the church as a whole, in terms of statements and papers and conventions and things, has been and still is involved in a certain degree of struggle and question and growth in terms of its response as well. I think any of us that are serious about helping ourselves and others understand and come to terms with homosexuality, the challenges that it faces or puts before us, coming to terms with our own feelings, our own need for understanding, we'll very quickly discover that there's an awful lot of information that we need to expose ourselves to. There's a lot of knowledge that we need to gain. There's a lot to know. There's a lot of misconception that we have lived with, I think. And so just facts and just knowledge is a very important dimension of this whole area. We tried to deal with that in the village by offering the session yesterday on background information. I know a number of you were at that, some of you may not have been. But I say that by way of introduction to this forum because one thing that we will not be able to accomplish at this forum is to cover the whole ground of information that might indeed be helpful and valuable. Our focus tonight is going to try and be a process of growth and a process of mutually becoming more sensitive to one another in this area by sharing ideas, questions, feelings in response to the more personal dimension, responding to gay and lesbian people. So I hope we can respect that for each other. I suspect that there will be some information type comments that come in and that are made, and we'll try to handle those as well as we can. But again, we won't be covering the ground from just an information point of view tonight. That's not the main intent of this. The two people that did the presentation yesterday, and by the way, the tape will be available tomorrow, John told me. The two people that did the presentation yesterday were Tosh Jordan and Elmer Witt. Both of them are with us tonight, and I've asked both of them to help us together make the transition from our thinking yesterday, where we were focusing on background information, to our focus tonight, which is more one of responding to the issue and gay and lesbian people. Help us make that transition by having each one of them just give a short statement, 2-3 minutes, in terms of their own response, the kind of questions or issues that come to their mind that they would like to share that might help our forum get started. So with those words of introduction, again, I encourage you in your statements to use the I statement format. I think you'll find that if you force yourself to use the word I, you will indeed end up sharing what you think or what you feel, and it will also make others feel more comfortable participating in the conversation as well. So Tosh, I guess I will first of all turn to you, and if you can make just a brief statement or share some things with us in terms of the topic that we're talking about tonight. What are the issues or topics or feelings that come to your mind when you're confronted with the question of responding to gay and lesbian people?
The first thing that always comes to mind is, why is this a big deal? Why is it an issue for us? I'd like to share a couple of things of just to give you some sort of idea of what it's like to be gay or lesbian in today's world. As I said yesterday, the choice that gay and lesbian people have to make is what to do with their sexuality. Whether they're going to stay in the closet, whether they're going to hide it and try and pretend it's not there, or whether they're going to be out of the closet, upfront about it and open and honest about it with themselves and with other people. If you're in the closet as a lesbian or gay man, you experience isolation. You experience isolation from yourself because you're not allowing yourself to experience yourself honestly. You experience isolation from your family because that's a large part of yourself that you cannot share with the people you've known longest. You experience isolation with your friends because the people you care most deeply about maybe aren't aware or you can't talk to them about that. You experience isolation from your church and from God. When you're not honest with yourself, how can you be honest with God? The question that always comes up is, what if? What if somebody finds out? What if somebody knows? What if somebody guesses? Whether it's a family member or a friend or a church, what if? You find yourself trying to cover your tracks as much as you possibly can. You have to be careful what you say and who you say it to. You have to be careful who you're with and how often, so people won't suspect anything. You get into a lot of game playing in relationships, and you end up hurting a lot of people because you're not open and honest with them. It's destructive to both yourself and our society. The more gay people there are in the closet, the easier it is for our society at large to make kind of an us-them feeling. For example, to say, we are obviously all heterosexual people, therefore we can talk about homosexual people out there, instead of acknowledging the fact that gay and lesbian people are part of our community, part of our society and our world, part of our church, and to deal with that in respect. If we're out, we experience isolation. We become one of those. Again, referring to kind of an us-them. We experience a sense of connectedness with ourself because we're honest with ourselves. We experience a profound sense of connectedness with our friends and family members who know, whether they accept us or not. It's a real feeling of honesty, a real freeing feeling to be out of the closet. It brings up a whole bunch of other questions, like job security. In most states, whether or anywhere where there is not a specific protection for gay and lesbian people, you can be fired from your job just because. You'll be passed over for promotions, for raises, for tenure if you're on a faculty. You can lose your job if you're teaching school. Another sense of isolation gay and lesbian people face, whether they're in the closet or out, who else is gay or lesbian? Who else? Statistically, 1 in 10 people is a gay man or lesbian. 1 in 10. We are essentially an invisible minority. There are very few things about us that distinguish us in our everyday behavior from anyone else. We do all kinds of occupations. We have all kinds of shapes and sizes, beliefs, colors, backgrounds. So it's if you're out or even if you're not out, it's real difficult trying to connect with gay and lesbian people. You have to kind of play this game and find out, establish some sort of trust to find out whether or not this other person is gay or lesbian. Society as it is doesn't work for gay and lesbian people, especially if they're honest with themselves and out. You're blocked from many careers, such as teaching school, being an ordained pastor, many others are simply out of the question for you. Your relationships can be blocked. It's very difficult to, as I said, to meet and associate with and talk to, even let alone begin some sort of relationship with other gay and lesbian people. The little things are really oppressive, not being able to express affection in public, not being able to use endearing language in public, not being able to speak freely your reactions and responses to things around you. My reaction to these forums is twofold, my personal reaction. On one hand, I'm very glad that we have an opportunity to sit down and talk about the issue, deal with where we are and how we feel, because I think that's an important first step to making some sort of understanding and change in our society. Personally, I feel very glad and very privileged to be a resource person in this kind of community where I can be open and I can share with people what it's like and help help downplay or work through some of these hang-ups that we have, though it is tiring at times to be in this kind of a role. And then I get angry. Again, why is this an issue? Why do we, as gay and lesbian people, why do I, as a gay man, continually have to publicly talk about, explain, and defend something as intensely personal as my sexuality? How many other people? Who else has to do that? It's, you know, why do heterosexual people, why do straight people so adamantly quote seemingly irrelevant sections of scripture and very old and outdated scientific theory as personal attacks to us as gay and lesbian people? Why? Why does that happen? Ask yourself. See what you have to say. You know, find out where you are. How does all this make you feel?
Thank you, Tosh. Elmer, I think I'll ask you to maybe make your statement and then invite comments or questions to either both of you or as a group in terms of sharing.
Okay. Mine are mostly feelings, I think, when I hear that, when I hear a question about what's response to gay men and lesbian. And the first is pain. I suppose surrogate pain or something like that, just identifying with the pain that I have sensed with people who have been so mistreated by our society. The pain of getting to know themselves and going through what that means in this society to discover that they are sexually oriented. And the pain that comes with them, all of the things that is that Tasha was talking about, that comes to me, that's the first thing. And the second is the pain of the people around them who, again, because I think of a society, and maybe stubbornness and whatever else it may be, go through a great deal of pain just in that whole discovery process too. The second is embarrassment. Embarrassment, first of all, because I'm a member of the church, loyal, committed to the church, and my admission that the church has been so wrong in my opinion about what it has said largely about homosexuality. That embarrasses me. It's akin for me to how wrong the church has been about women through all the centuries and about sexuality in general. Then I'm embarrassed because I still am dealing with my own reactions personally to homosexuality, because I am a heterosexual person and I still have to continue to deal with it, and I'm embarrassed. And I'm I'm sad. Also, when I deal with that, I'm sad because there is so far to go yet, and so much for us to learn and to share, and to seem to be so unwilling to go with it. So unwilling that it causes so much division, rather than it becomes an opportunity for us to learn and to grow together. Said that it has to take so long, and there has to be so many, what most of us consider bad things happening before some good can come out of it. And then say, finally, my strong feelings are that, from what I know about Jesus Christ and the Gospels, that it is precisely people who are being focused on and centered on for things that I believe they cannot in any way be held responsible for, their sexual orientation, and being abused, in a sense, sexually abused. But I think these are the persons of Jesus Christ.
Thank you for both of your opening comments. The intent of the forum is to hear each other, and I think Tosh and Elmer both shared themselves here very personally, even just in their opening statements. But let's hear one another in terms of your response, where you're at. What are the questions that you're struggling with facing? Where do you see yourself going, or the church going, or society, or?
You both started talking about your feelings, and so I can start with my...
A little louder, please.
I can start with my feelings, and my biggest feeling is that of confusion, and especially in the area of what is considered to be fact. Yesterday we had a discussion, or we had a presentation of what is considered to be fact, and I've only read one book about this issue, but the things I heard that were considered to be fact contradict with what I've read to be fact. And so my biggest feeling is, how can I make a reasonable, rational understanding of this for myself when the very facts, the things that I work with as facts, seem to contradict each other. And so, you know, I'm still back on that level of fact.
Thank you.
One of the things that I felt in the presentation yesterday too was that we tend to categorize, and Tosh brought it up again, and like you're either homosexual or lesbian, or you are straight. As I understand the scientific research, all of us have some homosexuality as a part of us. That is, we're all homosexual. I can relate to a man, that someone can care about a man, and that sort of thing, and that's the homosexual dimension of my life. My life would be less complete if I were not homosexual as well as heterosexual. And some of the scientific researchers that I found helpful have developed a scale from 1 to 6. One end of the scale are people who respond more completely in heterosexual terms, less in homosexual terms. 2, 1, 2, keep moving up. 3 is about balanced, where people experience about equal attraction, affection in homosexual, heterosexual terms. And you go 4 and 5 and 6 are people who are almost exclusively enjoy homosexual relationships, and not so much heterosexual. I find this helpful because, on the one hand, I think it helps me understand how I still, like Elmer, experience some of that embarrassment in my own responses and so on. And because in relating to homosexuals, it reflects a part of me. That isn't something I did. That's part of where all the level of feeling comes, because it evokes a part of me. It kind of scares the. And so often, what I'm in pain about at college is that so often people stereotype homosexuals, and therefore if somebody gives the least little affection, a man, a guy, gives the least little affection to another guy at college, right away he is labeled or tagged. The thing I found most helpful is to recognize that this is a part of the experience of all of us, and it's a spectrum. Some have a higher degree and some have a lower degree. And I think this can be helpful, in my experience, it's helpful also to people who are in the homosexual community, to realize that they aren't all only homosexual, that there are heterosexual dimensions of their lives, so that they're not so isolated and set apart, and that sort of thing. That perspective has been has helped me through the kind of process.
Yes, sir.
You made a statement about putting labels, and I think that's unfortunate because here we've talked about gay or straight, we talk about black or white, we talk about Norwegian or Swedish or what. I've had people come up to me and say, "Are you Norwegian?" And I say no, and they look like they're so sad. That's a difficulty that we do, and I think that the gay movement as such is a disservice to people who have that inclination for, however you want to identify it. Take the macho man that loves to go up in the mountains and hunt and fish and likes the company of men. Is he gay just because he likes that? Or is it another image we're trying to put a label on that? I like to know Tosh as a person. The other evening when he played the service and I saw what creativity he has. That's what I'd like to know Tosh for. Not for his sexual inclinations or whatever. I don't want to see a label.
You ready?
I teach Christian marriage. And sort of by way of apology to you and anybody else who has been offended by the reactions, the making a big deal. I grew up in a home where I had no idea. I mean, homosexuality did not exist until I was into adolescence, and I asked my mother once what it was, and she said it was either men who acted as if they were married to other men or women who did the same, and it was a sin. And that was all I knew about it until, and I would read things here. About a year ago, I think I began to wake up to people. And just like the forum that we had the other night about the hearing impaired, I think that's where it finally enters into when there is a connection with a person, when it isn't just a theory or something out there. A student of mine asked if he could please do his paper on a marriage. This is to work through a marriage problem using scripture and Christian psychology. If he could do it on a relationship between gay men. And I said, "Pip." I wouldn't know what to do with it if you gave me a paper. I said, "All I can tell you is that I know it's an issue, and I know I don't know anything about it. So as a professor, what am I going to do when you give me that? I can't reflect anything back to you. I can't guide you through this." I just felt helpless. And he was hurt, upset, angry. He told me he thought I was more open-minded than that, and he walked out, and he never came back to the class. I started working with people in my area in northern Illinois, two women who I respected very much as having invested themselves in the church, gifted, intelligent, good Christian women, and something that I said about something. Later on that evening, one of them came up to me and said, "As long as you raise the subject," and my mind is flashing back, what did I raise? "Would you mind using the Ministry Center sometime as a forum for a presentation on gay and lesbian life?" And then I realized that this is something that's much bigger and much closer to me than I had ever realized. And now I have to start asking the questions, and I don't know who to ask, except I know, as I begin to sort it out, I think that we're making the same, we're committing the same sin with you that we as a church community committed with us, with the heterosexual community, and that is almost treating sexuality as an adjunct to our humanity, something that really doesn't have anything, a legitimate part of it. If we're redeemed, that section isn't. And I think that we're just now waking up, even in the heterosexual community, to the fact that this intimacy is part of our wholeness. And until we come to grips with that and can enter into intimate relationship with ourselves and with God and probably some other one human being, we're not whole. And so now I see myself, just in the last few months, as having to go back and dig out this information so that the students that I run into, I can help them sort out how to use this intimacy to bridge the gap between themselves and whomever. And the object of that intimacy is immaterial. Only that we have to redeem that other segment of us. And I think that we're still digging ourselves out of heterosexual sexual hang-ups.
One of the saddest things that happened to me more recently is I was at church on a Sunday morning, and there had been a man that I've known for a long time who... He's had a great relationship with the kids at church, and particularly with one of my children, one of my sons, who was divorced 4 or 5 years ago, I suppose. He's been struggling a long time. And he kind of dropped out of sight at church. And in time, I came to find out that he's a gay man. It was something that he either denied to himself all those years, or, well, I think that's what it was. He denied it. Or kept it a secret. Now he feels he can't come back. And he's tried to go to the Unitarian Church. It's real unsatisfying to him. But he feels he can't take the sacrament. And the day I saw him there, he finally went up and received the bread and the wine after a very extended period of time. And then he just wept and said to me, he said, "I don't know what's right and what's wrong. I only know that this is what I am, and I don't know what the judgment will be on this, but I have to trust that God will take care of me. And if he doesn't, I don't know." You know, I felt this poor man was so broken by our decision about sin and focusing sin into that one category that to me doesn't make sense at all. And I just feel the church has, I'm so glad we're talking about it. We need to talk about this more. I guess to just finish that, I just said to him, there's nothing to forgive. There's nothing to forgive. And that's all I can respond.
I just finished a book that I recommend to everybody. It's done by a famous psychiatrist who was set up by the government to study the My Lai problem, what occurred in Vietnam, called People of My Lai. And since he was a young psychiatrist, he said he's always been concerned about the category of evil in psychiatry, and that there is no such category. But he said there should be. And he said that his category, the definition of his category, would be something like this. The use of power over others to impede spiritual growth. And as he develops this, I can see his reasoning. But then when I reflect on this particular issue, which too much of the time we say, well, that's evil, that's a sin. It's not a sin, and it's not evil at all. It's an attitude, a disposition. But it's certainly, the people I know who are gay or lesbian are the least evil of the people I know. I mean, they are really good, active people whose
if they have a problem, it's trying to deal with a heterosexual society that doesn't accept them. And I don't know, and that's why I'm here, because I don't know how, what in us makes heterosexuality the norm, except the majority opinion, in homosexuality is wrong any more than monogamy is right and polygamy is wrong. I mean, I feel like Supernatural, Aquinas spent a lot of time developing Aristotle's philosophy, showing everything as normative according to natural law. But we are supernatural beings above the natural, and if we are going to develop fully as humans, we have to take in all these aspects of ourselves which contain more than just natural. And I don't think we've done that. We're still dealing with 15th century philosophies and 19th century psychologies.
Other voices.
I'd like to try to separate a couple of problems that I see. I don't think that, well, tonight we're talking about our response to gay people. And that's what I want to talk about. But also, I don't want it to be a foregone conclusion that we all agree about the facts about homosexuality. I think that there are some facts that we didn't talk about yesterday that we could talk about. And for those reasons and others, I think I'm inclined to say that the attitude of the church toward homosexual acts should be that they are wrong. But I'm not going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about the attitude of the church toward homosexual people. And I think that's really a different question. And I wish, along with Tosh, that it wasn't such a big deal. For some reason, the idea of homosexuality scares people a lot, or they feel attacked by it. And I think that in the church we're guilty of noticing that, how can I say this in a neutral way, noticing that thing when we ignore other things. Well, I guess I just have to say, noticing that sin when we ignore others. Every church has people in it who are avaricious, who are prideful, and those are very serious sins, but we don't kick those people out of the church. And it makes me very sad that we cannot accept people the way God accepts them, as they are. I take it as a given that we're all sinful. And when I came to the church that I go to, I didn't feel that I had to change my life. I had to conform to all the standards that God has for me in order to be accepted in the church. And I wish that we could apply that same kind of acceptance to people who are homosexual.
Thank you. I think, you know, your comments are very helpful, especially the one, I think, and it's worth noting that we're not at a point where there's agreement within scientific community or church community or whatever on the facts or whatever, you know, the pursuit to understand as much as can be understood about it. And I hope that some of you have not felt that there's been an attempt to impose a party line in terms of facts or anything like that. Those disagreements are real and, you know, need attention, and goes back, I think, to my initial comment about one thing we all discover is, like you said, we need to do some studying. We need a lot of homework. But I think regardless of the homework that needs to be done or the disagreement of the facts, when push comes to shove, we are confronted with our own feelings and our own response. And that can go in terms of myself. How do I deal with that? Can go to your comments about the church, you know, how we feel the church has or hasn't responded, where we feel it should maybe go or not go. Society as a whole, I think our response is to kind of things Tosh shared earlier about what it's like to be a homosexual person in a very much heterosexual society. Regardless of agreement or disagreement on all the facts surrounding it, that's a real question. That's a real issue where we do all participate. So I encourage you to... Yes, Terry.
The Lutheran church that I know is not characterized by people filled with judgment or hate. The words kicked out, that does not reflect my experience in the Lutheran Church, at least in California, of any of the bodies that I know. And I know it doesn't characterize the parish of which I'm a part. I think the church is doing fairly well. We have a lot of problems in the parish I'm a part of. We're confused about a lot of stuff. We really don't know how to deal with a divorce in our congregation. As soon as it comes up, somehow we feel this ought not to be, but we don't know what to do about it. I don't think we stand in judgment on the persons. We know they're hurting, they're suffering. We don't even know how to help them. We have other people who, you know, they're alcoholics, or they have people that have teenagers and they just don't know how to manage and cope with it. And we're really confused. We don't have a lot of answers, but I think there's a great deal of acceptance. With homosexuality, every time we've had this forum or discussion, the thing that comes through is we're very much confused. And it's difficult to get data and facts because there just isn't that unanimity of agreement. In the congregation, our people have refused to put this above who we are as Lutherans, that we're people who gathered by grace, we share a faith, we're a community, and basically it's irrelevant whether a person is a homosexual or not, as it's irrelevant on a whole bunch of other things. That is not a question that's pertinent when they make judgments. The president of our congregation was a homosexual. I wasn't sure of that until just before his election. He came to me and he asked me, being a homosexual, can I be this officer in the congregation? And my answer to him was, well, Ben, you know, there's quite a number of people that have asked me if you were homosexual. I had to tell them I really didn't know, and I really wasn't too concerned, and not a single person that asked me was really that much concerned either. They just wanted to know because they wanted to know. And he served his term and served throughout the congregation. But on his part, he used a great deal of He understood the confusion of other people, and he didn't push them and force them beyond what they were able to cope with. As far as I know, he never raised this question with anybody else. A treasurer of our congregation 5 years ago was a homosexual. We had invited the Lutherans Concerned in Los Angeles to come and have a meeting in our congregation. They were going to have a monthly meeting. They needed to come someplace. And so I simply announced to the council that some of the meetings that were coming up, and one of them was Lutheran Concern, and it was received as part of the agenda. The treasurer objected, he didn't object. He wanted us to make a statement affirming the church's position about homosexuality. And other people in the council said, we really don't know what our position is. We really don't know. But it's irrelevant if this is a service to a group of people who feel that they're doing something of a ministry and worthwhile, we ought to be open to them. No one on the council objected except the treasurer, who later revealed that he was a homosexual, and he felt the church had to take a stand on this. And my position and others was, well, there's so much confusion, I don't know what the stand would be, except that it's irrelevant. That, you're welcome to give your ministry, to give your presence, to share the ministry here as anybody else, and it's irrelevant. What? He finally resigned from the position, not because of the insistence of others, but because he felt that the congregation wasn't responding with an overt enough action. I don't know. We're confused, and I am personally confused. But I'm not confused, and I don't think the great majority of people in our parish, and I don't think the majority of Lutherans that I know, are worried about others being homosexual. But rather, are they responsible people, and do they think seriously that they follow Christ when they share his ministry?
Is known homosexuality an obstacle to ordination? If a man or a woman were homosexual, would they be permitted to conclude their seminary studies and be ordained or not ordained?
I think that's accurate. It is also true that the church body I know best has known homosexuals serving as clergy persons, and they have not been asked to leave. And I think the practice is to deal with it on a case-by-case basis by the bishop. Is it disruptive to their ministry in that kind of way? But I think it is true, Judy, that in both ALC and LCA, at least, those who are not yet ordained and who come out of the closet and say, I am gay or lesbian, will not be ordained.
That is correct.
I suspect it's true in LCMS as well.
Is it also true, though, that they are not asked whether they're gay?
I don't know that they're asked.
In our sense, they are not asked.
No, I don't think they're asked. But I would, just to kind of put the other side on that, Jerry, I'm from Minnesota, and we don't believe in sex there. Well, we don't talk about it, except when it comes to homosexuality and abortion, the other issue. And then we do have some very, very vocal churches and people who are a great deal less than confused. I mean, more than whatever. They just are against it.
But they have great certainty about where they are.
Oh, my. Without a doubt. So it isn't always so comfortable.
A couple of people have said, they're confused in the facts. They don't know what the facts are. And I don't know what the facts are that they're confused about.
My guess is that there are these possibilities of what they may not. know about some understanding of the biblical passages that are often used in saying that homosexuality is a sin. There's some of the studies, the development of how does one become oriented homosexual, what happens among them, how safe is it to have homosexuals around, like teachers or whatever, things of that kind. Studies, many studies have been made, and certainly not all of them that have been made, but in those areas it seems to be at least some.
I think another area of confusion, if you want to talk about facts or issues that surround that I think troubles some people, and we didn't even get into this in the session yesterday, but there are some people I think who would take it as a fact or believe it to be true that a homosexual can be cured of his homosexuality. And that's a real divide in terms of what you accept as fact or not fact about what it means to be a homosexual person. And we didn't get into that issue at all, but I know for some people that's a real difference of opinion over something that you might consider fact or not. Is it or is it not true that this may happen? Yeah, how about Tony?
I'm from Minnesota also. And I think when we put the word sin on something like this, for me, it just becomes out of proportion, because to me, the sin that's so overwhelming is what society has done to harm the ones who have a different orientation than the majority orientation. In Duluth, just a year ago, we had a human rights ordinance up for a vote. And it was written in human rights language, but the only issue was that homosexuals would have some added privileges. There was a long pastoral letter signed by many respected pastors in Duluth urging people to vote for the human rights ordinance, and it was voted down. Overwhelmingly, it was voted down. And I just think society at large sins so greatly in so many of these instances. It will come up in Duluth, hopefully, again, and eventually, someday, it will be voted in a majority where people can accept all brothers and sisters as equals. But at this point in time, Duluth has voted it down, and the rest of us live with this embarrassment and this knowledge of our inability to treat brothers and sisters as brothers and sisters. At the same time, I teach in a college. This particular college happens to be a Catholic college, where the drama coach was essentially fired 2 years ago. Of course, in this college, no one ever knows why there was a firing, but it became very common that he was fired because he was homosexual, and he was not in the closet at that time. He has stayed in the community. He has stayed in the community, and he operates a bar coffee house for gay men and lesbians, and does his service in that way. I just think society sins greatly.
Back in the corner.
This fall, I had the opportunity to be a peer minister at Michigan State University.
A little louder, please.
I had the opportunity this fall to be a peer minister at Michigan State University, and a lot of the students that I deal with these in this time and age don't have answers or questions that they have that your generation might have had answered for them. And I think it's really hard for them to go through life with these, you know, and there's no guidelines anymore of what's good and what's bad and what's sin and what's not sin. But I noticed that with a lot of the problems, or a lot of their problems we're dealing with, their sexuality and whether they were gay or not gay. And I think as a church, if we're not accepting of them, I think we lose a lot of people. And I know a lot of people who have been turned off because of the experiences they've had in churches.
A question for me in this area that's really essential, and Tosh proposed it earlier, is why is it such a big deal? Why in our society, in a society today in which we have been able to become much more open-minded regarding human sexuality and the kind of clothing that people wear and the kind of movies we watch and the kind of jokes we tell in public, why is this one issue about human sexuality still such a...
Why is it singled out as an issue? Your point about civil rights or the things, the rights of people in society should be the rights of people.
Nobody's ever been fired for being a heterosexual.
I don't know that. You know, they get fired for lots of causes. Whatever the cause is, if it can be identified, should be fought within the legal system.
I'd like to try a response to that because I've speculated about that too, and I wonder what the reason is, and I think the reason is, and here I'm revealing some of what I feel myself as well as what I think others may feel, I'll just say that, I think it's because it involves sexuality, first of all, and sexuality to most people is a very scary thing still, a very frightening thing, and a very central part of what it is to be human. People intuitively know that. Even in Minnesota, I think we know that. That's why we don't know how to deal with it. We know that. And that frightens people. And many of those people, including myself, have been taught to believe that it is simply not God's intention for humankind. God's grand design doesn't provide for homosexuality. But it may happen. It does indeed happen. But it's viewed as an aberration from the grand plan. And when people then are told to unlearn that and to accept it as one option among two, or among six, or whatever the spectrum allows for, and I happen to find that helpful, what you shared, because I think that is useful to recognize that all of us have within us both maleness and femaleness, and both hetero and homosexuality. But I think that's why it's an issue for so many people. Because so many people have been taught that God's plan simply doesn't provide for ongoing, continuing, lifelong existence in relationship to another human being with one's sexuality in a same-sex way. And whether that's right or wrong, that's where a lot of us have been. That's what we have been given. And to unlearn that is very difficult and very painful. And I think part of the confusion for some of us is we're not sure that's wrong. I think that's where the church statements have basically come out. I know the ones that I'm familiar with have basically said, we do not understand homosexuality to be the intention of God for humankind. Nevertheless, they go on to say, you cannot exclude people from the church, the fellowship of the church, for any inclination or behavior in the area of sexuality. You cannot deny them civil and legal rights on that basis. So I think the church statements are trying to say both of those things, but they are not, for the most part, departing from the traditional church understanding that God's intention for humankind in sexuality is heterosexuality. I think that's the basic reason people are so troubled about it and for what makes it an issue for people.
I just said, or procreation.
It's related to procreation, of course. Continuing the race and all of that. And if that is wrong, then there's a great deal of unlearning, theological unlearning, that has to be done. And that won't happen in a generation or two. It'll take much longer than that. And then it does go back to what does the Bible say, and there is confusion about that among our people, I think.
So I had Bob
to piggyback on that. I think it's often beyond the theological as well, in that people who may not have much of a theological orientation, there's still such a fragile sense of society and how society hangs together, and it's enormously threatening, I think, both to individual persons and to the fabric of society, when there are deviations from a kind of a norm, and that would relate to this issue, it relates, I think, in a lesser sense to marriage and divorce. It would relate in a much larger sense to monogamy versus polygamy, if that were ever to rise again. And I sometimes think it might, living in the part of the world that I do. And some of these things, and there's a sense that...
he's not from Minnesota. That'd
be a last place. We believe in sex. at least the dominant religion down there is, I think, 2 times the national average in terms of the number of kids produced. I think a lot of it has to do with a fragile sense of order and structure within society that probably in the American experience is even more accentuated because we are such a polyglot of peoples and don't have some of the same cultural things built into us that get built into some other more stable societies. I think within the church we say the same thing and we put religious words on it. I guess what I'm saying is that I think even beyond the church there are the same concerns, only it from a social fabric structure, and people get extremely uptight and nervous about the things that threaten the social order.